Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. I'm the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rachel Simmons is our guest this hour. She's been with us before. She wrote, some years ago now, a best-selling book, and it was really a breakthrough book, Odd Girl Out, The Hidden Culture of Aggression in Girls. She has been looking more recently at social media because it's really exploded in our lives since the publication of Odd Girl Out, The Hidden Culture of Aggression in Girls, and The Curse of the Good Girl, Raising Authentic Girls with Courage and Confidence. Those are her books. She, in a recent interview on National Public Radio, said, "If I'm upset with you and we're both in the eighth grade and I don't have the tools to tell you that, I'm going to get on my cell phone. And because I'm not looking you in the eye, I'm going to say terrible things to you. And if I go on Facebook and I say nasty things on your public page, other girls start to see it. And if they want to get involved, they can add what they feel. And the target begins then to feel that not only does everyone hate me, but I can see that. Everyone can see it. And I can't go home. I can't hide." She will talk more about this hidden culture of aggression this hour and give advice to parents and teachers of teenage girls. And we'll welcome phone calls, too. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Hi, Rachel. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me again, Kathleen. Great to be back.
Yeah, nice to have you here. Well, we've talked to you many years ago and more recently, but let's start with this explosion in social media in our lives and what it means to be anonymous and how teenage girls are using this.
Sure. Well, a study last year found that American youth ages 8 to 17 spent up to 8 hours a day with an electronic device of some kind. Yeah.
Whoa.
It's like a job. It's like a full-time job. Imagine. And not only that, but a great many of them are using that media while they're doing their homework. They're using that media while they're in the same room with people. So they're texting in front of their friends.
Right.
They're texting their friends in the same room. I mean, it's ubiquitous, and it's part of many kids' every waking moment. And that has transformed the landscape of bullying because it means that you can take, you know, the bathroom wall, which you used to scribble on back in the day, and a few people would see it, and then somebody would wash it off. And you can take that bathroom wall now, and you can launch it into everybody's bedroom, into everybody's pocket, and you can increase the way that someone is hurt, you know, the speed with which someone is hurt, and the scope, in ways that I don't think anybody ever anticipated.
Yeah, and it's all there, and it does something. I'm around boys all the time. My family is all boys. We got a male dog. It's all male stuff. but the boys are of the age now, and we still have a teenager who texts all the time. It drives me absolutely crazy. But the relationships that develop and how people are in touch with, how are you feeling, what are you thinking, or writing things second by second, and you have how many texts by the end of the day? I mean, it's really messing up people's relationships with each other. Give each other some space, for heaven's sake.
Well, and also, I mean, I was pretty astounded when I heard last year that the American teenager, average American teenager, texts 3,000 times a month.
Wow.
There was one girl the New York Times interviewed who had texted 27,000 times that month and described her history homework this way. She said, "Sometimes I'll be reading my history book, and then I'll get a text, and then I'll get another text, and then I'll text again, and then 20 minutes later, I'm like, oh, yeah, my history homework." So the implications for kids' study skills, for their ability to focus, you know, this isn't just a social problem. It's actually really affecting American education, I think, and the way kids are now learning.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this eye to eye and what it does to your social relationship and what it does to the nerve that you may have to tell somebody that you don't like them or to say nasty things to them or spread rumors if you don't have to look at that person in the eye.
It's a great part of this whole issue. It's a really important thing to talk about. And I also want to point out that we adults, I think, struggle with many of the same things that kids do, including the use of social media to avoid that direct contact. But what's different for kids and especially for girls? Well, many girls really lack the skills to communicate directly with their friends. And at the same time, their friendships are a huge part of their lives. Their friendships are part of how they define their self-esteem. You know, in other words, if I have a lot of friends, I feel good about myself. And their friendships play a big role in how their social status is defined, too. So it's like, I'm popular, I'm not popular. So these are things that are really important to girls. So girls' relationships are so vital, and oftentimes they don't know how to communicate when there's a problem, so it becomes much easier to pick up the phone or pick up the keyboard and say whatever I think. But of course, if I don't see your face, why should I be sensitive to your feelings? If I'm just angry, I'm going to get a false sense of confidence and say anything.
And Rachel, this popularity is more important to girls than boys. If so, why?
Well, it's not necessarily that it's more important, actually. Popularity is important for boys, too. The question is, what defines popularity for girls and boys? And we know that what makes a boy more popular tends to be things like athletic ability, sense of humor. What makes girls more popular tends to be who they're friends with. So it's more about, you know, who you sit next to on the bus or where your sleeping bag is on the floor at a sleepover party. If you're in the middle of the room, you're more popular than if your sleeping bag is against the wall. I know, it's pretty stressful. But that's how it works. And so it's really about what makes you popular. And that's why girls use social media so much more, because for girls, their popularity is dependent on their friendships and their relationships.
Yeah. What about I think I've said this to you before, and maybe you were the same kind of person. I'm forever thankful that I was never, even though I kind of longed to be in a way a cheerleader, and I knew who the in crowd was, I was kind of a nerd, you know, who liked theater and dancing and the arts, and so there was a whole different crowd involved there. But it's sort of, I don't know if this was real prominent years and years ago, but I think that we need to extol the virtues of being a nerd growing up.
Well, it's actually, I think that's absolutely true. And a colleague of mine, Alexander Robbins, just wrote a book called The Geek Shall Inherit the Earth.
Yes, I love it.
Yes.
All right.
Her study of how oddballs and, you know, kids who are on the margins actually are likely to become more successful and tend to be more authentic. Because the reality is, when you are trying to be accepted and when you'll do anything to be in the in crowd, you lose who you are. You lose yourself and you lose your values. And you also often make decisions that don't get you on the right path for being successful later, because maybe you don't want to be seen as too smart, and so you don't take that science class or you don't join the math club or whatever it is. So trying to be popular may have immediate social rewards, but it can also have serious long-term consequences.
I know that you've had interviews with hundreds and hundreds of girls for years now. Please describe to us, in whatever way you want to do this, the depth of bullying among teenage girls.
Well, I have to say, I find myself kind of amazed by how often I am amazed. In other words, this is what I do for a living, and yet I still find it astonishing how cruel girls can be. I think part of what has changed is how much younger the behavior is becoming, particularly with respect to social media. A lot of parents are giving up control over technology access earlier and earlier. Many parents, and I get why, think I just have to let them use it because I can't stop this tidal wave. It's coming, and everybody has a Facebook and everybody has a phone. But when you put a cell phone or a Facebook in the hands of a 10-year-old, they're not ready to use it. And so some of the cruelty happens in part because kids are getting access to stuff that they just, in their hands, becomes so much more destructive than if it were in the hands of an older kid. The other thing, too, is sexting has also become a really virulent form of aggression. One thing that really surprised me in my research for the updated edition of Odd Girl Out was that I learned that when a photograph of a girl went around that was sexually revealing, other girls forwarded that picture as a way to hurt her and punish her.
Really?
Yeah, and I really thought, oh, this is like a guy thing, and it's not. When girls get their hands on it, they say, oh, she's a slut and she deserves it, and, you know, she did this, and so I'm going to really rub it in, and I'm going to punish her even further. So it becomes part of the way that girls police each other sexually, which they've always done. But now that's continued in the sexting realm.
I don't know if this is an old thought from one of the girls that you interviewed or if it's applicable now, but this really struck me in one of the answers you received when girls were talking about bullying, there's an aspect of evil in girls that isn't in boys. What did the young girl mean by that, and would you agree with that?
Well, you know, I feel so conflicted about that, Kathleen, because I know that girls regard themselves that way. Girls will often describe themselves as evil. They'll say, we are just terrible to each other. And, you know, women do the same thing. So let me first say that I think it's a shame when that happens, because you can experience the cruelty of girls and women and not give up hope and faith that women and girls can be wonderful friends and companions and supporters and mentors and colleagues. And so it doesn't have to be a black and white thing. That said, I think that because women and girls don't get permission to express themselves directly in this culture, because it is much more acceptable for a guy to hash out his conflict directly with another guy, it forces girls and women to repress their feelings until they explode, to plot and sneak around, and to do the kinds of things that unfortunately earn them that kind of label. You know, is that because they're inherently evil? No, I think that if girls and women had more permission to speak up, we probably wouldn't see some of this behavior.
So when you talk about guys speaking up, you mean verbally speaking out about things or physically speaking out?
Well, I certainly don't endorse physical aggression as a way to settle your conflicts, but I think I'm just talking about verbally. I mean, if you look at some sociologists and anthropologists who have studied the play patterns of girls and boys, notice that when boys play, there is a culture of what some have called ritual arguing, so that boys kind of get used to arguing with each other when they have a problem with a game. They fight over, no, this is the rule. No, this is the rule. No, I think it's this way. Or they'll do something where they'll one-up each other as a joke. Well, I'm better than you. No, I'm better than you. Girls don't know how to do that, because when girls fight over a problem with a game, they actually just stop playing the game and they walk away and they stop being friends with each other. So there's a muscle that boys build that makes them more comfortable with argument that then carries over into adolescence and adulthood that girls and women don't have. And so then conflict becomes something that has to be avoided, but of course it rarely can be avoided, so that it just changes forms.
Tell me what the consequences are of this, particularly social media bullying that's taking place. We hear about sensational stories. I'm wondering if they're just sensational stories or if there really is a very deep problem of depression, of suicide, because of this online kind of bullying, Rachel.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I think we do live in a very headline-driven culture, and I don't think we'll ever fully know to what extent suicides are linked to bullying. The statistics, are well measured, and some things will always elude us. We'll never really know. I do think bullying is an epidemic problem, and it is important that the media has finally begun to pay attention to it. So, you know, unfortunately, some communities have had the spotlight shined on them, and now they are responding. But in most communities around the country, when bullying happens, parents are totally helpless. And cyberbullying has made it even worse, because most schools are not legally permitted to protect kids from cyberbullying, because it usually happens off school grounds. Parents may not know it's happening, so there's no rules, there's no punishment, and that, of course, creates very little deterrent for the cyberbullies themselves. So whereas at least you had some recourse for quote-unquote conventional bullying, now with cyberbullying, you know, parents feel absolutely helpless. They don't know where to turn.
Right. Tell me about the anti-bullying legislation that is now in some, how many states? 20 states? More than that?
I don't know what the exact count is. It may be somewhere 26 or 27, but don't quote me on that. States including, my father's a state legislator in Maryland, and he's a co-sponsor of the Safe Schools Act there, which is sort of a nice keeping it in the family thing. And, you know, states are doing a number of different things. First and foremost, most of them have books on the statutes or trying to get statutes passed that require every school district to have an anti-bullying policy in place. And that policy actually says to teachers and to administrators, when something happens, this is what you need to do. And it is amazing to me how few schools had that kind of protocol in place, because without any kind of instruction, without any kind of definition of what this behavior is, how is a kid going to be protected? How is a family going to get recourse? So that's kind of a basic thing that the laws are doing. Some states are going further, and they're talking about cyberbullying, which is very important. Most states are now including that. Unfortunately, as I said, public institutions are not able to regulate what happens off school grounds. So the furthest these statutes can go is to say, if it happens on school property or using school property or at a school event, then this behavior becomes actionable. But unfortunately, that doesn't really get to the heart of the problem.
Rachel Simmons, our guest this hour, author of the New York Times bestsellers Odd Girl Out, The Hidden Culture of Aggression in Girls, and The Curse of the Good Girl, Raising Authentic Girls with Courage and Confidence. There is now an update, which includes a lot of information about cyberbullying. That update is out now of Odd Girl Out, The Hidden Culture of Aggression in Girls. She graduated from Vassar and won a Rhodes Scholarship and attended Oxford University, where she began studying female aggression. She is the co-founder and program director of the Girls Leadership Institute and works with schools and organizations all over the world. She's a leadership development consultant for the Center for Work and Life at Smith College. She has worked as a classroom teacher. She was host of the PBS television special A Girl's Life, and she writes an advice blog for girls at teenvogue.com. Here's our phone number. A couple lines are open for you to join this conversation. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now for Rachel, starting with Janelle in Harbor Springs, Michigan. Hi, Janelle.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead.
Oh, there you are. I was just wondering how many of these kids would do this if they couldn't do it anonymously. Would they have the guts to do these things if it had to be known where it's all coming from?
That's a great question, Janelle. I want to start off by saying most of this is not anonymous. I mean, most of this is happening, email to email, Facebook to Facebook, phone to phone, and I think that's part of what really is a clue that the kids are not necessarily in control of their impulses or what they're doing, because they often later feel regret or realize they shouldn't have done what they did. However, Janelle, there is a website called formspring.me, which is not intended for anonymous cyberbullying, but which has become appropriated by millions of kids to cyberbully each other anonymously, because it allows kids to leave comments on other kids' pages, and no one knows where they come from.
Oh,
you
my.
Just know it is someone who knows you. And So there's no question that the virulence of those comments is in a class by itself, and certainly would not be what it is, I think, were it to be open and not anonymous.
Isn't it amazing how much time everybody is spending doing this? What happened to reading books or,
Yes, it's really amazing how it's kind of taken over. And I think that is really why I spend a great deal of time traveling and speaking with parents, doing parent education often in the evening in a school community. And a lot of my time is increasingly taken up with just talking to parents about the need to set limits on tech use. And to say to parents, you know, that gut feeling that you have that it was too early to give your kid Facebook, or that he's online too much playing games, or she's talking too much on her phone, you know, it's okay to say no. It's okay to say, you know what, we're going to put these cell phones away right now. We're going to have dinner as a family, or we're going to turn them off for the next 2 hours, and you're just going to do something, you know, play a game, read a book, whatever it is.
Right.
Parents have to, I think, take back some of the control that has been appropriated by kids. And it's a tough, this is the big battle of the 21st century between parent and child, no question.
I know, and it's a huge battle. These devices, we've had that in our household, get rid of the cell phone at dinner. It's a huge battle over it. Excuse me, what's the big deal? Get rid of the cell phone at dinner. You just shouldn't have it. And then it falls on the floor, and surreptitiously people are trying to read under the table, and you think, why is this so darn precious that you have to hold on to it when you're eating your food?
Yeah, it's really true. I mean, I was just on vacation, and I want to say, I guess in preface to this, adults do this too, and I think that's what you're saying, Kathleen, is that this isn't
right.
just a kid issue, that norms have really shifted, and there seems to be a sense that it's okay to whip your phone out in the middle of dinner. So when I was just on vacation last week with some people, We went out to dinner, and somehow something happened, and suddenly everybody was just looking at their phones.
Oh.
But we were at a dinner table at a restaurant.
Oh, no.
I started laughing because I thought, you know, we're always harshing on the teenagers, and here we are, you know, adults in middle age, and we're sitting there looking at our phones. So this conversation can't really be just about kids, because there are plenty of parents out there who are just as culpable and who, by virtue of the way they engage with their technology, send a message to their kids and script their kids. It's no different than anything else that you model for your kids.
Right. Thanks, Janiel, for your call. Susan on the road. Hi, Susan.
Good morning. I substitute teach. That's not exactly my choice of profession right now. I'd like to be a contracted teacher administrator, but that's the scenario. And while districts have policies against cell phones, rarely do teachers follow them. And as a substitute teacher, it was clearly written in my substitute folder by the administration what the rules were, and I followed them, and I was taken off the substitute teacher list. I mean, I think it's blatant in terms of being oblivious to the effect that cell phones have when students are, I'm not saying all students, but it's a significant percentage of them, I would say close to 75%, carry them with them, have them in their pocket or their purse, and are checking them frequently. And when I talked to the assistant principal, who I didn't know at the time was going to take me off the list because I'd followed their policies to the letter, it's a distraction. I mean, we're not good at multitasking, and students are there to learn, not to see who's texting or emailing them and every 10 minutes or less.
What was the policy, Susan?
Policy was that we should take their cell phone, which all you had to do was put out your hand. I never had to engage in any verbal issues with them.
Right.
And get their name and then submit it to the office, which they would log in. And if they had 3 infractions, they have to have their parents come. Often they would really worried that I was going to read or someone was going to read their messages. And they insisted that they'd be able to take their SIM cards out first. Which in almost all cases they did. But, I mean, I think it's very poor. And I even talked to HR about the fact that this was a precipitating reason why I was taken off the list. And, in fact, this assistant principal said, well, I can't imagine they'd be doing anything bad. I'm thinking, this is Waukesha County. You weren't around when the whole sexting was going on in the press. I mean, he wasn't from Waukesha County originally, but this was ludicrous. And I got no support from going to the administration or the superintendent or the school board.
Rachel.
Well, I think part of what Susan is pointing to is the same thing that I'm saying about what's happening with families, which is that there is a relaxing of enforcement and rule setting and limit setting around social media use. And whether that's because people have decided, well, there's nothing we can do and it's a tidal wave and we just have to give in, or whether it's just sheer, lack of desire to do anything, I don't know, but it is a serious problem. And a huge amount of cheating goes on using cell phones.
Really?
Well, especially because you can put things on your phone and then look at them during an exam.
Oh.
You can text the answers. A lot of kids are very skilled at texting. They don't even need to look down at their telephone when they're punching the buttons, so they can text. They can be looking at the teacher with their hands under the desk and texting to someone. So it is a shame that you were not supported in your enforcement of those rules, and yet I also think your experience is emblematic of something that's happening not just in schools but in families and culturally.
Yeah. It seems fair that there should be a rule that you just simply can't have cell phones in the classroom. They can be put in your locker on off, and if you have an emergency, you can go and. But we all lived without cell phones. It's kind of goofy, isn't it, that everybody has to have a phone in his or her pocket all the time?
I couldn't agree with you more, and yet I also have to confess I'm sort of guilty of always having my phone in my pocket. But I think schools are, to me, non-negotiable. I don't
right.
see the need. There are people, though, Kathleen, who disagree with me, and there is a movement to use this trend in favor of education and rather than seeing it as something that's undermining it. So there are there's a movement to use cell phones in the classroom, to use Facebook as a way to teach. And I'm not opposed to that on its face, but I think it's really important that we know the difference between what's good educationally and what's just kowtowing to a trend. And sort of being uncomfortable with actually just saying no.
Yeah. Susan, thanks for the call. Holly in Onalaska. Hi, Holly.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that this is just a wonderful, wonderful program. I think that there's a lot of stuff that, as parents, you know, we're missing. We had an incident with, as a Christmas gift, we brought in the internet, this was a few years ago, into the house. And my husband and I are not real computer, you know, literate, but our kids were really computer literate. And they're just ended up being so much drama with our youngest daughter and her friends that we ended up having to just wipe it away. We just decided, no, we're going to cancel tape our internet because her drama level went up from 50% to almost 90%. And it was just such a noticeable difference in her behavior. And it's such a quick response, and it's almost like these kids can't take a breath and just see, you know, see the other person and see how they're feeling, how they're reacting. And it escalates, and then all of a sudden then they're sorry the next day, and you know, and it's created more and more drama. And this, again, it's wonderful that you're talking about this and informing, you know, parents that maybe aren't, you know, even knowing about what's going on with their kids and the internet and the cell phones. And I just wanted to say that. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Holly. Rachel.
Yeah, thanks, Holly. I think that's a great story, and I'm so glad you shared it because one thing I have learned, I help run the Girls Leadership Institute summer program in Massachusetts. We have girls who come from all over the country, and we are a program for adolescent girls that does not permit free use of cell phones. The girls get their phones during designated periods, not very many of them. And, you know, some girls actually elect not to attend because of that, but many,
goodness,
when they turn in their phones, act like, you know, they act a little bit like addicts, like, oh, my God, how am I going to be without my phone? And eventually, they end up thanking us for it. And eventually, they say, you know, it's really nice just to be where I am and not try to be in seven places at once by texting people. And it's really good to disconnect. And so I want to really urge parents to keep that in mind, that as much as kids kick and scream, they often end up appreciating the opportunity to rest because, you know, as Holly, the caller, was pointing out, it does ramp up the drama. It can be exhausting for a girl to deal with. And, you know, another thing I often say to parents, Kathleen, is, you know, think about that thing when you were a kid that your parent would not let you do or made you do that drove you crazy. But today you think to yourself, man, I'm so glad my mom or dad said no.
Yes.
Right? This is that thing. This is that thing that I feel certain kids will thank you for setting the limits later. They sure won't thank you now, but they will thank you later.
Yeah. Here's an email from Susan. When my daughter was in seventh grade, she was bullied physically and psychologically at school and on the internet. As you say, the school could not do anything about the cyberbullying. They did take some steps to deal with bullying that was happening at school after we complained about what was going on. Some incidents happened in full view of teachers. They did nothing until we complained. As a result of her experiences, my daughter barely left her bedroom for an entire year after the incidents, had no friends and no social life. To this day, she is in college. She has a very hard time making friends with women, is very distrustful of their motives, and has few female friends. What a sad story.
Yeah, that is it's sad and sadly not uncommon. And I think I want to say that I think, you know, really making an effort to heal from that by seeing a psychologist or a social worker or some type of therapist who can help you work through that is so important. I think our culture does not take seriously just how damaging bullying can be for adults. And I would say probably once a week I get an email from an adult who's asking me about, you know, is there some type of recovery program or help for me because I went through this so many years ago. And it really is a trauma to go through this for many people, and it has lifelong consequences. You know, one program that I've recently become a part of is called Mean Stinks, and it's a Facebook platform where a community where girls and young women can go to talk about their experience of being bullied and get support from people like me and other individuals. And I really have appreciated seeing how many people have joined that page and have clearly found comfort and connection there. Because, again, I don't think we take that seriously, how painful this behavior can be.
So Susan's daughter should go to Mean Stinks.
Mean Stinks.
Good.
Yes, on Facebook.
Good.
It's been great.
Josie in Sheboygan. Hi.
Hi. Good morning. I don't know if anybody, I mean, at one time they should have studied this. Why, you know, they used to think that it was because they were influenced, but I've taken care of kids on and off all my life, and it seems like they just have an innate cruelty. And why doesn't somebody study why that is? I've known kids that were very sensitive, you know, and then they were like, it's like they're wearing a sign, pick on me, you know. And I remember how mean they were. When I was young, I had a weight problem, so you know how that goes. And I really wonder why people or the human species is just so cruel. And they graduate to their highest cruelty as they get older and older. And I just really don't see, I mean, in this day and age, you know, they're chopping each other's heads off and capital punishment and whatever cruelty to animals is going as, you know, even factory farming. It all is related.
All right. What about human beings' cruelty in children specifically? Do we know enough about that, Rachel?
Well, I think aggression, there are certain things that kids are just born with. There are kids who are born with a predilection to seek power and to be in control, and that can sometimes manifest as aggression. I certainly believe that, I think just as the caller has been someone who's been around kids for many years, you just see that. You see that there are certain kids that are more prone to taking power, and you see kids that are more prone, more vulnerable, to others. And so I think in some ways that is a disposition thing. It's how kids are born. On the other hand, I think there's an enormous amount of parent modeling that plays a very powerful role in the development of aggression in kids. And so, for example, there was a study done a few years back of nursery school girls and their mothers. And the study looked at how the moms intervened when the girls engaged in what's called relational aggression, meaning saying something like, if you don't do what I want, I won't be your friend anymore. Or you can't come to my birthday party, which most parents will recognize immediately as you know, something that very young girls will do. And so when the moms did not intervene, when the mom said, oh, ha-ha, you know, of course I'm coming to your birthday party, those girls were much more likely to become psychologically aggressive and to use that kind of behavior as they got older. For the mothers who did intervene, who said, this is not appropriate, you may not do this, if you do it again, there will be a consequence, those girls became friendlier and they became less aggressive. So what parents do, how parents respond, is absolutely vital. And that study, among others, really shows us we've got to intervene earlier and earlier.
Mm-hmm. Josie, thanks. Sarah in Madison, hi.
Hi, I have several points. First of all, I want to agree with, as a parent that has set some limits or was on vacation and the batteries died on the phone so the kids couldn't use their cell phone, not on purpose, On two separate occasions, the child who was addicted to the cell phone actually admitted, you know what, I had more fun and I interacted with more people. If I would have had my cell phone, I would have just been on the time with my friends. So I just wanted to say that, you know, if you set the limits or they have an extended time without the cell phone, that they actually did thank me. But there was NPR did a story a while back that talked about how kids of this age actually see the cell phone as almost an extension of themselves. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, that was a story that they did intergenerational stuff with like the grandma and the mom and then the teen, and how the teen actually said, you know, I can't let go of this cell phone because it's part of me. And mm-hmm. So just how that is getting tied in as far as telling the high school kids to put it in their locker.
Right. I'm glad you brought that up. I think, first of all, thanks for the affirming story of the success of setting limits with a kid. I think that's great. And then in terms of having the cell phone be an extension of the self, it's a great point because it really illuminates just how the 21st century has changed relationships. And it is true. I mean, girls have said to me, I don't exist if I'm not on Facebook. And I think what this means is that kids, not just girls, but girls and boys, look at social media as an extension of their lived relationships. So
sure.
virtual relationships mm-hmm. and real-life relationships kind of blur together seamlessly so that they are part of the same big relationship that a kid is having.
Mm-hmm.
And so to take that away feels literally like something is being amputated, like I am actually being cut off from a significant part of my relationships or the way that I navigate my relationships. We, as you know, somebody who didn't grow up with that technology personally, I don't have that experience. But I think that kind of a point that you're bringing up, Sarah, shows that kids are looking at it differently. And by the way, I think it means that we've got to be more empathetic as parents and teachers because they are seeing it in a different way. It doesn't mean that it's bad or wrong. But it does mean that what they are experiencing and see is very different than what we do.
Yes, good point.
And as far as setting limits, so we went from a pay-as-you-go plan, which is somewhat cheaper, to needing to do the parental controls that we can set. And I've got to tell you, it's expensive. And there are not very many providers that, there's just like two providers that can say, you know, you can go in and turn it off at midnight and turn it back on at 8, and you can have an hour off during the day. It's expensive to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's also a really important point, is that it's not easy for parents to set these limits, that you often have to learn about the technology and you have to pay for it.
Thank you, Sarah, very much for your call. Mary is next. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. I've not been able to listen to the whole program, but I wanted to make a comment on aggressiveness, not only in children, in girls, but in children. And when I was raising my kids, and I was doing it in perfectly good conscious, I thought, you know, like, who's going to be the first one to get dinner finished with dinner? Who's going to be the first one to get done with their bath? Who's going to get their homework done first? I didn't realize I was how much I was encouraging competition and the desire to be better than somebody else. But my kids now are raising their kids, and one family in particular, A, they don't stop everything to answer the cell phone. They don't have the internet on, and they don't tell their kids who's going to be first, who's going to be first. And there's such a sense of peace in that household. And the kids totally adore their parents, but they're not arguing and battling each other for a toy. They're working cooperatively, and I think, you know, it's real easy to say we got to set limits. Adults, we need to set limits. We need to set limits on ourselves because it's the very example that we give of how our cell phones dominate us and how our internet dominates us and how we have to be the first and we have to be the best. And it's a huge, huge cultural unconscious, I think, influence that's just coming to the fore.
Yeah, I think you're right. I did make reference to that earlier, but I can't really hear it enough because, you know, I'm someone who spends a lot of time reading about parenting and talking about parenting, and I it makes me very uncomfortable how much of parenting literature focuses on what you need to do to or for your kid, whereas I think so much of it has to do with us as adults and the example that we set, and I think we've got to get right with ourselves often before we focus on what it is we want our kids to do or how we want to, quote-unquote, fix a problem.
Rachel Simmons is our guest this hour. She's the author of Odd Girl Out, The Hidden Culture of Aggression in Girls. That book has been updated with a new emphasis on, or an expanded emphasis on, social media. She's also the author of The Curse of the Good Girl, Raising Authentic Girls with Courage and Confidence. I'm Kathleen Dunn. More phone calls in a moment at 800-486-8655. We also have several good emails that have come in, disturbing emails, important ones, and we'll take those. That's talk at WPR.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our next caller is John from Eagle River. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
All right, you?
And I may sound like a defender of the NRA, which I'm not, but I don't think the cell phone is the real culprit. If it was, you could buy all these kids' track phones that gave them 200 minutes and about 20 words in texting and then leave it at that. As soon as they ran out, they ran out. My experience in teaching is bullying really begins by example, whether by their parents, one bullying the other, or an uncle bullying an aunt bullying bullying an uncle, a grandmother bullying their grandfather, and they learn how to do this at home. And then they get into school, and they find some easy targets. And in reality, the Columbine killings were really a result of bullying that was by the athletes, supported by the teaching staff, because oftentimes the bullies are the favorites of the teachers, and they let them enforce the laws in school. So this bullying thing is a much bigger thing than who's using cell phones and who's saying what girl is ugly or what girl is, not morally pure.
That's a great, I'm so glad you brought that up, John. I think that's absolutely true. I certainly don't think that social media is the problem. And in fact, one thing that has not been said is you know, how wonderful social media can be and how important it has become to our culture and how wonderful it is for kids and their relationships. But putting that aside for a moment and returning to what you've said, there is no question that power and privilege in a high school, for example, among athletes, as you've pointed out, certainly affects how bullying occurs, and it is often the compliance or the collusion of adults who remain silent, who know what is happening, who permit by their silence kids to harm each other. We see that across the board. We see, for example, in private school communities, families who have more money, typically their kids receive a different kind of justice and discipline than kids who have come from families with less money. And so, people who have more power and privilege are often, less likely to be on the other side of a bullying situation than, and I think you're exactly right.
Thank you, John, very much for the call. Cornelia is next in Madison. Hi, Cornelia.
Hi. I'm absolutely thrilled with this program, and thank you so much. I enjoy you all of the time. I wanted to make a comment that goes back a couple of conversations with Rachel Simmons with regard to her saying it was like an addiction. I believe this is an addiction, and it's very serious with regard to our culture. I have two granddaughters, both who have been cyberbullied, and one opted to take herself off of Facebook, which I was very glad to see. But I just have to say that I feel that this is a form of addiction, and that it is, I concur with many of your callers and with both of you, that you need to take that cell phone away. I was visiting one granddaughter, excuse me, and she had the cell phone in bed with her and looking to see who was calling her until she went to sleep. And I just thought, wow, how do you get any rest? It's like creating a form of ADD all of the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, your focus is never on just one thing. And that's my comment, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Cornelia, for your call. Rachel.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's absolutely true that that kids are not capable of, most of the time, kids are not capable of setting their own limits. And, one thing that I think it's important for every parent and kid to know is that if you are cyberbullied, and I think this caller is pointing it out, you need to put the phone or the computer away. It is not useful to try to fight back. And so internet safety experts recommend that you do three things. You, first of all, you stop, meaning you stop trying to engage, fight back, or respond because it is useless. You block, meaning you block the user, either on Facebook or cell phone, and you can always learn how to do that by going to, a site like Google and just typing blocking someone on, and then enter in whatever device or software you're using. And then thirdly, report what has happened. And those are really the three steps that people are encouraged to follow.
Cornelia, thanks for the call. Here's an email that has come in. Actually, we have a lot of these. The schools may not be able to police Facebook or Twitter, but they certainly can and should implement anti-bullying curriculum. They need to make it clear that bullying is unacceptable under any form and teach students how to express their feelings constructively. These things certainly would have helped me when I was 13 and searching for my father's gun because I couldn't take the bullying anymore.
Very sad. Very sad indeed. You know, I definitely agree with that, and I think I often refer to relationships as the fourth R. We have reading, we have writing, we have arithmetic. We should add relationships to that list. And we should, because actually civility, good citizenship, how to communicate effectively during a conflict are skills. These require skills that need to be learned and practiced, and sometimes failed at and practiced at again. And I do think that if more schools focused on teaching kids the skills to handle their conflicts with civility and dignity, we probably would not have a need as much for anti-bullying curriculum and policy, because it would simply be part of our expectations of the kids.
Right. I'm with you. Cornelia, thank you. Chris in Madison. Hi.
Hello. This is Chris.
Yeah, this is Chris. You're Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to tell you that my daughter and I flew to California this summer in July, drove home in a car that I bought in California in February, and the two of us left our cell phones home. It was not intentional on my part that I left mine, but she was going to leave hers behind. We had a wonderful trip together.
Aww.
She read Harry Potter to me.
Aww.
The first book.
I love it.
We just had a great time without phone assistance or the complexness of having one along. I know there are benefits to having them, but it was just a wonderful trip, I thought.
I think that's lovely, Chris, and I really challenge parents to consider just taking one night and saying, you know what, tonight we're all going to park our phones and we're going to not be online. If you want to do it for an evening or even for 2 hours, and really sticking with it and just seeing what it's like, and maybe trying to have a night like that once a week or a period like that once a week or maybe just during dinner time, but really challenging yourself to go against the tidal wave of technology and to say, what might our family be like if we could sort of turn back the clock and just be together right now having dinner without interruption, or just have a Saturday where everything is turned off. And you may be surprised by what you find.
That would be a good idea. Let's start a movement.
Cell phone's new to her, and I just thought it was a great start to have her realize before she gets that involved with having one and relying on one all the time.
Right, I think so. And, you know, not every girl is so in need of this kind of regulation. I mean, I would say that the more insecure a girl is and the more worried about her relationships is, the more worried about her relationships that she is, the more probably obsessed with technology she'll be. I mean, I can't back that up with research, but in my work with girls, my sense is that the more worried they are about their relationships, the more they pursue the technology as a way to make them feel better. Of course, it often ends up making them feel worse.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you had a wonderful summer vacation, Chris. That's good.
It was good.
That's good. Thank you.
Thank you for the program.
Sure. We go to Eric. Goodbye. Eric in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you doing?
Fine. You?
Very good. When are you going to have Rafi and Elfie Cohn back on again?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I'm here now, but those are good ideas.
they are very influential in my life. Anyway, I wanted to comment. Some years ago, our church asked me to give a little presentation to the younger parents. I'm an older parent. Don't wait till you're 50 to have the first one. I don't recommend it. But all of these things you're discussing are fine if you can enforce them, quote unquote. And it becomes much easier if you have a good relationship with your son or daughter. And here's the first point. That starts right when they're on the floor. You know, not when they're 11, 12, 13, or 14. You could wind up with a stranger by that point. Okay? Second thing, what you accept, you teach. And you teach by example. And don't ever forget that. Those are two of the things that I presented to the young parents. I felt bad for the ones who, you know, whose kids had already got into the near teens and they discovered there's a stranger in the house. But you'll play, old maid, guess who, and all of those things every time they ask for it, because you'll never get the second chance, and you may lose them at that point. Excuse me, I didn't mean this is kind of a sensitive issue. We've had a good life, good parenting together. Our son is starting college, it hasn't been easy, but because we presented a united front and we had established that relationship, as soon as he was on the floor and crawling around, it was made easier. So I wanted to pass that on.
Thank you, Eric. Good luck to your son in school. It isn't easy. It's really true, Rachel. You can follow all the rules, and there is this whole different society now. And it is the way kids live. It's consuming them. It's something that you have to understand in addition to living by example, but you don't have control over all of it. You just don't as a parent.
No, I think you don't. And I do agree that a strong connection with your child obviously is going to be important, but particularly, too, when you talk about setting rules and saying no, talk about why. You know, relate to your child as an individual who deserves to understand the reasons behind your choices and the values that you embrace as a parent.
Yeah, Rachel, thank you so much for the hour.
Thanks again, Kathleen. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, pleasure to have you on. Rachel Simmons, she has an update of her last book, Odd Girl Out, The Hidden Culture of Aggression in Girls. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, Chrissy Pease for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Tomorrow during the 9 o'clock hour, we're going to talk about jobs. How do we create jobs? We're going to be on that issue every now and then. Sheldon Lubar, our guest, at 9.